Because they tried so hard, you know, to save money. Right. Like my parents, they saved for years and years and years. Every time they went to the supermarket, it's like they have a sign on the back of their head that I'm saving for a house, you know, for years and decades. And that influences every single thing, like, say, my mom bought. Not until that was accomplished, you know, whether a mentality has changed a little bit, maybe living in a more relaxed way. But younger generation these days, you know, they're more chill about this.
Welcome to The Bridge. Fun conversations on culture, life, and everything in between.
Find us where you get your podcasts. If you like the show, then consider pushing the like button or giving us 5 stars. Suggestions, comments, anything you would like to share, email us at welovethebridge@gmail.com. We love The Bridge. Welcome to The Bridge. According to the BBC, 63% of new home buyers are now jointly signing mortgages. Given the dramatic increase in the cost of both renting and buying a home, is jointly buying a home with family or friends the new way into the property market? Do people do this in China, baby?
Well, just so you know, this word, mortgage, inspires like zero interest. But there is an interesting twist to this because we're talking about joint mortgages.
There's actually a very high ownership rate in China. Statistically, most people in China tend to own their home outright.
Yeah, well, I think things are changing now because, let's say, my generation, people like of my generation had a lot of help from their parents' generation when it comes to buying houses and even when it comes to raising their children. For one thing, houses were like, we caught the bubble, right? Almost at the top. That's when housing prices went up like crazy. And my parents' generation didn't have to worry about that too much. Like literally when I was little, back in the 80s, we were given housing. Like everybody had apartments to live in. Yeah, we lived in Wuhan and my mom worked in a university. So your workplace would provide you with a space, like a living space.
Wow.
I'm not too sure how that was done legally. Like, does that belong to you or not? Probably they did. It wasn't like a renting deal. So it was not really much of an issue. But then when I came into adulthood and then, you know, it's this whole housing market. And when I was like of house buying age, prices kept going up and up and up, like beyond anybody could have envisioned. So it was like a problem then. But now like the younger generation and they're like this couple, they're thinking they just got married. They're thinking about buying a place. Of course, they'll have to take out mortgage because they live in Shanghai. Now, if they live in like back hometown in the county or in the nearby city, then houses are pretty cheap. You can probably buy something for like $100,000 where they live. But in Shanghai, that's a different story, right?
Yeah.
They've been watching. They've been like apartment shopping, but they're watching because they think prices are going to fall further.
Wow.
And younger people, they're not as in much of a hurry. Like they're not as fearful of the future because I guess for two reasons. I mean, they're doing fine. They're making enough money and they're from, you know, families with decent income. So they grew up in with a very strong sense of security. You know, they're psychologically, they don't have the sense of scarcity that their parents' generation grew up in. So they're not in a hurry, you know, to get everything done and make sure that we are all secured for the future to come. So that's one side. And the other is the environment is changing, right? Housing are not selling as crazily and prices are dropping. So they're just waiting to see. And when they buy, they'll definitely take out a mortgage. And I guess that will be a joint mortgage because there are a couple. And I actually did look into the housing and I saw it came across this piece of news that in 2023 in the city of Shenzhen. So it's like a newer city and with a lot of, you know, it's like the center of technological development. And now more females are becoming homeowners, home buyers than males. The percentage was 53.1% females, you know, buying property versus 46.9% males. Mm-hmm. And the average age of home buyers was 39, I think.
Wow.
So older than before. Yeah. And the in other cities, things are a little different, though. I have a chart. So this chart is from 2022, so 2 years ago. It tells me the average age of home buyers, and the youngest is only 22 in Chengdu, and it goes up to like 31 in Beijing. So that's 2 years ago. And Shenzhen is, I guess, higher than all of these. Yeah. So yeah, people take out mortgages when they buy houses in China because it's just, you know, so much more expensive. But of course, if they can afford, like their parents can come up with enough cash, they have enough savings, they would prefer to, you know, put in more as down payment.
Well, in the United States, the situation is dramatically different from that which you've described.
How?
And whereas in the past, joint mortgages consisted of partners, you know, it is now something that friends are doing together.
Wow. You know, that's interesting.
There's an entire movement on social media, Instagram, where there are people who are, you know, refurbishing homes together, like two best friends out of college, you know, guy friends who are not in a relationship of any kind, are buying homes together. They're, you know, I guess they sign contracts with who gets what percent or based on how, what are the conditions in which they would sell and how they would split up the money if they sold it someday. Mm-hmm. But in order to afford a home in the United States right now, where the median cost of a home is almost $600,000, it is now increasingly necessary to cooperate with your friend circle. And a lot of people in the United States obviously don't get married until they're in their 30s now. And so, and a lot of people are not getting married at all, a whole new entire relationship landscape. So the idea of being able to afford a home by partnering with friends is now changing the market dynamic in the United States. Where in China, you might buy a home with, you know, maybe your dad would be a cosigner, or your spouse would be a cosigner, your mom or grandpa or something, where you need help. And that might be a form of a joint mortgage. In the United States, it's like two buddies are buying homes together, which is, you know,
creativity.
Yeah. If we look at Beijing, Shanghai, maybe Shenzhen, right? The cost of, or Hangzhou too, right? The cost of buying a home is really, really quite expensive. And so it's maybe in those cities, it's on par with the medium price of a home in the United States. But the rest of China is actually quite reasonable. Summer and I, my wife and I, we were just looking at the cost of buying a new apartment in Wuhan, brand new, fully furbished with a river view. And we found this beautiful apartments like it on the river, 20th floor, looking at, you know, bridges, absolutely resplendent. The cost of this apartment, 800,000 RMB, which is about, what, $110,000. You could not get that in the United States. And if you'd found in a place that was $110,000 in the United States, it'd be like in the middle of the woods with no hookup to electricity or something, you know. So it's a completely different situation. In the United States, even though, you know, they get paid, the you know, GDP per capita in the United States is higher, it still doesn't make up for the massive in cost of living expenses. And by living expenses, I mean the cost of renting or buying a home. So actually, I think it's really interesting. I'm in a situation where you, in like you, where our generation is not dealing with the same problems as younger people. Right. And it looks like in this regard, you're saying the situation in China is maybe like the United States situation in the 1990s,
you know,
where people go ahead.
So like this younger couple, my husband's sister's son and daughter, they were thinking about buying a place in Shanghai, and their parents were.
Oh, my. Wow. They must be rich.
No, but they feel like
buy a place in Shanghai.
It's possible. I mean, like my aunt, another of my aunts bought one a few years ago for a little over 300 million RMB.
300 million?
Are you sure? Sorry. No, 3 million. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Does it have a helicopter pad on the top?
Sorry. No, I don't have an aunt that's that rich. I was thinking of like the zeros.
So. Oh, yeah, sure.
So, you know, like it's doable. She sold one of her old apartments, like back in a county in another province. And that was like the down payment. And they have some savings. They're probably paying a mortgage. I didn't ask. But it's not as crazy as it sounds. Like, she just, from a normal Chinese family. And she bought the house so that she could help take care of her daughter's kids. Like her daughter, so my cousin has two sons and they have a little place of their own in Shanghai, but it's too crowded. So my aunt bought another place. So yeah, Shanghai sounds expensive, but it's not impossible. And the young couple I mentioned, they make enough. They make a decent salary. And they just want, it's more like a sense of stability. Like they're paying a few thousand for rent, which is not crazy. It's like, you know, it's not much for them, but they just want a sense of like, I have my own place. You know, I have a foothold in the city and that's where I can start a family and all that. And their parents are looking to help. Like Chinese parents, they're so like, they're so into their kids' lives. Like they want to do everything they can to help. So my husband's sister, she stayed like in Shanghai for a month and went like everywhere looking for apartments.
Wow.
Like the couple wasn't even like eager to buy. They were just thinking about it. And she just like showed up in Shanghai and like, I'm here to look at houses for you. So she went everywhere. It was kind of like a traveling experience for her too. So she was just, you know, doing two things at once. And she would check out all the places, asking the prices and doing all this for her. And she, like, she can't wait until they have a baby so that she can start taking care of the baby for them. Anyhow, so that's like, you know, a kind of a normal picture of Chinese families, maybe a little,
you know what?
Different.
You're reminding me of why my wife and I bought an apartment in Wuhan. We were kept putting off having a home because we had this idea. We wanted to see more of China before we decided to settle down. It was about 4 or 5 months after her mom arrived to live with us for a while that we ended up buying an apartment. Nah, I see what's going on behind the scenes now.
Maybe it's just like, you know, she brought in a different energy. Right. And
the
she,
buying a home now energy.
the thoughts of all of you, what's the word, coalesced into action. So or otherwise you'll just keep, you know, there will just be floating thoughts maybe for 5 years in the future. So, yeah. Anyhow, people like younger generation. Oh, I was saying how on the trip back, you know, the relatives were saying as she was watching. You know, the street view, and she saw some young people and she was like, you know what? I don't think young people are feel the way they feel about housing is the way we feel about housing because they tried so hard, you know, to save money. Right. Like my parents, they saved for years and years and years. Everything, every time they went to the supermarket, it's like they have a sign on the back of their head that I'm saving for a house, you know, for years and decades. And that influences every single thing, like, say, my mom bought. And not until that was accomplished, you know, where their mentalities changed a little bit, maybe living in a more relaxed way. But younger generation these days, you know, they're more chill about this. For one thing, it's a little bit more far reaching for them. You know, if they live in Shanghai or Beijing with houses, apartments and you know, priced at the in the millions. And they're making what, like 10,000, like 20,000 a month. So they feel like they're so far away from it that they might as well just chill, you know. And also, as I mentioned, they're just not as insecure about the future in a way. Like my parents' generation, they've been so like poor for so long. They just want to, you know, make it. They want stability and they want a sense of security. But the younger kids, like in their 20s, early 30s, they just want to live their lives. You know what I mean? Like they want to go out for a nice dinner. They want to go to the movies. They want to go travel. They don't want to be tied down by like a 3 million RMB mortgage, you know, that they have to pay in every single month. You know, they wake up with this huge sign, I'm in debt every single day.
Yeah.
They don't, you know, they don't choose to live like that and they'll just pay rent. And so psychologically, I think younger people are more comfortable with not owning a home, but maybe things will change when they start having babies and, you know, they get tired of moving around. That probably, I don't know if it's the same in the US.
I am not an economist, but one thing that I noticed that in China, things happen differently than in the United States. In the United States, there's a lot of microcultures that are very totally autonomous, doing their own thing, have nothing to do with each other, don't influence each other at all, across states, across ages, across, you know, different interests. In China, I just want to give a couple examples. Last year, there was the Zibo craze.
The what?
Do you remember this? There's a city in Shandong called Zibo.
Oh, yeah. Zibo, yeah.
Everyone went from knowing there was a city called Zibo to tens of millions of people from all over the country obsessed with Zibo, taking trains to Zibo, eating chuar in Zibo. It was a national obsession. So how I want to translate this is I see the real estate market kind of like this in China. This is just my guess. I don't know what I'm an entertainer, guys. Don't hold me accountable for this.
Sure.
But what I see is everyone I know is like, oh, we're waiting. But I mean, I literally know everyone. And everyone I know says, we're waiting. We're almost going to buy an apartment. We're waiting for the prices to drop.
Yeah.
What's going to happen is Zibo. Suddenly, people are going to start buying apartments and the real estate market's going to be like Zibo, and it's just the prices are going to start rising again because people didn't buy when it's cheap. And guess what? It's cheap now.
Yeah.
If I was going to buy a second apartment, which I'm not, I would buy it now because it's not going to get better than this in my opinion. But I do want to talk about the topic a little bit.
Sure.
Because I think it's really interesting in terms of this is happening in the UK. This is happening in the United States. This is a new phenomenon. And I think it's really interesting. And there's a lot of, you know, concerns to be addressed here. Mm-hmm. So this is from the BBC. Halifax, first-time buyers are joining forces to buy properties, January 31st by Laura Jones. And it mentions 63% of first-time buyer mortgages are taken out between January and December 2023. That's 2023. Were in joint names with two, and this is the interesting part, or more people. Hmm. So we got friends of like 3-4 buying apartments together in England. Mm-hmm. I think that's fascinating and concerning because in America, we have a phrase, maybe you have something similar. Never go into business with your friends. Have you ever heard that?
I don't know if there's a set phrase for that, but I understand the mentality. Yeah, things could get complicated.
Exactly. And then you can end up hating each other, destroying your friendship because business is complex. You have to make cutthroat decisions sometimes. You have to look out for yourself, but that doesn't always look out for other people. Mm. Imagine buying, okay, let's say three people buy a house together. And then in 1 year, one of them finds their dream partner and decides to get married and they want out of that investment. And the first two people are like, no, we need to keep this house for 5 years because we want to sell it when the market's better or something. Mm-hmm. That becomes a point at which their friendship becomes into danger because they're going to want different things and a lot of money is going to be involved.
Yeah. Well, for the married couple, for the one who is going to get married, he's going to lose his friend anyway. So I don't think he's going to care much. But I think, you know, as I was reading about this, I was like, this is a creative idea. And but maybe not for the long term, like property holding period wise, because things will change. Mm. Right. And also I was thinking lawyers are going to get busy with this new situation because I think there are so many ways that things can go sour. Friendships get messed up and just people have different ideas. Right. I mean, it's hard enough for a married couple to stay together and make things work. Imagine that people don't have the amount of commitment. Right. And the dedication to keeping things together. But I think a lot of people, they just kind of want to have a place of their own. And also because prices are rising or because it's becoming harder to become a homeowner. It's more like, you know, they psychologically, they feel like I got to do this. And maybe they're not thinking about living in that particular house for a really long period of time. It's more like an investment idea. I think why not, right? If maybe after a year or two, they can sell it for more and then just divide up the money. But I guess, as you mentioned, they need to talk about arrangements beforehand. Like, how are we going to deal with this, right? If any one of us leave or if any one of us get fired and has no income a few months later. So, a lot of things that have to sort things out. It's possible.
Oh, right. I didn't even think of that. Yeah. What if one of you? Oh, then are you paying their part of the mortgage? Oh, wow. That sounds so complicated.
Think about Friends, you know, the TV series Friends. Six of them.
Yes.
Like actually buying a house together. How different the story will unfold. How differently it will unfold. I can sort of think
Chandler lost his job again.
No, isn't he the more stable one?
I don't know. I've only seen 4 or 5 episodes of Friends.
What? What?
Sorry. I was a Seinfeld. There was Seinfeld and Friends, and I was like a Seinfeld.
Oh, my. Well, they don't conflict. You haven't finished watching Friends?
No, like, I never watched all of them.
Like, your Chinese friends will turn away from you. Like, my generation of Chinese, like, they grew up on Friends. They've like they study it. Some of them have watched like over 10 times. But anyhow, wow. I was thinking about how fun the show would be, quote unquote, if the six of them or like three or four of them end up buying a place together. Mm. Like what if Monica and Joe? I think that could work because Monica likes to take care of things. And I think she will be on top of like finances, the legal issues, how everything is done. And then Joe is like, yeah, whatever. You know, he just needs his three meals a day. And hopefully he makes enough to pay for his part. Or maybe he'll just like live in the attic and things could work out.
Yeah, I think you just wrote, you know, the next iteration of Friends.
Yeah. The Friends in the new age where people can't afford to rent a place. While I was watching the whole thing, I was thinking because you know how like Rachel and Monica, they shared an apartment in New York.
Right.
But I was like, okay, so Monica is a cook and she probably makes a decent salary. But Rachel, she was working as a waitress. I don't think she will work. And also in a coffee house.
Right.
I mean, how can they afford a nice apartment?
This was the 1990s. You know? I guess now they would have to be commuting in from another city.
Okay. Okay. So I'm not going to take this too far. I was just thinking, you know, that would be a fun idea. But the 63% of first time buyer mortgage were joined names. That was kind of surprising. That probably included married couples, right? It's not just...
Yeah, or sometimes you're in America, it's not uncommon for young people who are taking out a large loan to get one of their parents to sign on as a co-signer because the bank will say, well, you don't have a lot of collateral or whatever. So why don't we just have your mom sign along? And then if you can't pay...
Your mom will be the collateral.
Yeah, your mom's credit will like supplement your lack of credit because the United States credit is a huge thing.
Well, in China, like your parents would just give you money. Like, I don't think there'll be any legal signatures involved.
Mom, do you hear that?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. Like, if I want to buy a place and my mom, you know, my parents have enough to help me, they'll just like suitcase load of cash. Yeah. Like, here you go. And take it to the bank.
Well, you know, I heard about that when I first came to China. I think it's less common now. But when I first came to China, 2012, 2013, 2014, I knew a lot of young people, you know, who were in their 20s and 30s who were getting married. A lot of Chinese couples. And they were always like, yeah, we just got our house. I was like, what? Wow. You're like 25. How did you get a house? And they're like, oh, his mom and my mom, they got together and negotiated and they bought us a house. Yeah. And I was just like, really? I want Chinese parents.
And probably a car too.
Wow.
Yeah, because that's considered like, you know, the deal before a son or daughter gets married. But anyhow, things are going to change starting from my generation. Mm. I don't think I'll do that for my daughter.
Uh-oh.
Because I don't know if I'll have enough to spend by myself, for myself. So I've been telling her, you got to work hard yourself, okay?
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to The Bridge.
Can I tell a story? Because this might be similar to your future potential story. I have a friend who is a Lawai. He's a foreigner from England, and he married a young Chinese lady. And her parents are from Xinjiang, but they live in Beijing. So her parents are not super rich, you know, like how you're describing yourself. But they wanted to be those parents that ensured that their daughter, before she got married, owned a home. Mm-hmm. So they went to like seventh ring, you know, this was like 2016, Beijing seventh ring, and they bought a nice apartment, but it was affordable because it's so far from the city that you could practically not get there unless you have like a 3-hour taxi ride, right?
Yeah, I can imagine that.
They don't live there, but they own it.
Yeah. Some people do that. You know, you start with something small. And I think in cities like in Beijing, there will be more like smaller apartments, like studios in Tokyo, that kind of thing, like just one room.
Oh, gosh.
I think that will be nice.
Terrifying.
You know, no, I think it'll be nice. I wouldn't mind living somewhere like that.
I think you would. I stayed at an Airbnb in Tokyo and it was like one of those tiny, tiny, tiny places. And the sink was the toilet because the sink was mounted on the toilet. And there was like a bathtub shower thing that you have to stand in. And then, I mean, it was like scooting around the entire house. The whole house was like walking sideways through it.
I know.
I would not want to live in that place.
Yeah, I like traveling to Japan, but living there would be a different thing because like things are so much smaller. But I guess in the countryside, people live in houses and it's much more spacious.
Sure,
but, when I stayed in Kyoto, like the apartment we stayed in, it was actually kind of like a condo kind of place. So it was like two stories and it looked so nice in pictures. There was even like a gallery, like a wall with like paintings in it, in a glass case. And wow. I had everything needed, two bathrooms, like two bedrooms and these very nice sinks with like light. Like if you put your hand under it, there would be a blue light. Anyhow, wow. But when we actually got there, it was like I could touch the wall with my left hand, stretch, and my right hand would reach the other wall. It was like how wide it was. And the three of us, we were like laughing because it turned out to be so small. And we were thinking how the photographer really had to angle himself correctly to be able to take in the pictures. Like he maneuvered in the most skillful way to make the apartment look big and nice. And there was a garden that was like literally one.
It turned out to be, it was a potted plant.
Basically, there was like one tiny tree and the yard, the garden was about 1 square meter. Wow. But still, it's a garden and you can see it from like the second story. It was still exquisite though. Like it was very nicely done. You had everything. It was just very narrow. Mm. So yeah, that's one thing about living.
Well, you know, we also talked in the past about maybe people don't want to live with their parents in certain circumstances. Maybe, you know, their relationship isn't great or whatever. So I do want to come back for those people who are renting in the United States right now or in England right now, and they're considering this new path that's kind of coming out of moving in with your friends and buying a home together. There's an article here by Belinda Moffitt called "Should I Buy a House with a Group of Friends from stuff.co.nz?" That's New Zealand. And it just has a couple points that she wants to point out. So agreeing on the plan, she says, determine each co-owner share. And it says, make a plan for how long do you intend to own it together. And then, so that's something you and I thought of. And then it also says, you know, pre-plan if you want to make improvements on the property. So before you buy the property, you know, you need to think about, are we going to make improvements? What are those going to be? And then another one, which you pointed out, what happens if one of you loses your job? And then the last one she mentions is, how do you manage a regular and unanticipated maintenance costs? Because maybe the roof, you know, needs dramatic repairs. So you never know what's going to happen. Or like maybe a tree falls on the roof, you know, all kinds of things can happen in a complicated world like ours.
Yeah. I was just thinking, because this kind of arrangement, I think it's called tenants in common, as opposed to joint tenancy. Wow. Like joint tenancy is where the ownership arrangement is entered into by couples buying property. So they're like legally binded together.
Yeah, they're legally the same person in a kind of way.
Yeah, tenants in common. That's like, you know, friends can join in and buy together. And I think I read somewhere that in this case, tenants in common, each is responsible for the whole mortgage. Like you are liable to pay for the whole mortgage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the pressure is not split if anything goes wrong. I might have to double check, but I read it somewhere. That's the case. I do have a question, though, now that we're talking about tenants in common.
But maybe you could make a separate contract with a lawyer between the two of you outside of the bank's.
That's possible.
You
know,
so after you sign with the bank or before you go to the bank, you go to a lawyer together and you sign a separate legal document between the two of you about what you would do in that case, then go sign with the bank. And so I don't know.
I feel like by the time they get into the lawyer's office, like the friendship is like frayed already, you know, by that time, they might not last until the, you know, when they actually sign the contract. Yeah. But I was thinking, let's say if I were to get into an arrangement with my friends or a friend to buy an apartment in Beijing, like I feel like my mom or dad would be offended, quote unquote offended, because they'll be like, you're going to buy a place.
Wow, really?
Why don't you ask us, right? You know, like we have the cash. We've been saving for decades. And what are we saving for?
We wanted to buy you a house and you just do this to us like that? That
they feel like, what, you know, we like are always standing by to help you in any way we can.
Right.
And you go off with that girl or that guy, whatever, and sign up and, you know, give your future income of, you know, 10 years for that place. Like, would your parents be offended this way? I'm not. Well, it's not really offended, you know, but they would notice and they would feel like, why didn't you think of, you know, us in the first place? Like, how American parents.
And when I was 18, I told you this before. My mom and dad were like, Jason, get out there and become a man. This is the date you need to be out by. Here's a bicycle. We're dropping you off. It was seriously like that. It was like, go. And so, yeah. And I think at least in my generation, because we talked about this last week, in my generation, it was go out there, do it yourself, be your own man, you know, grow up, you know, it's time to grow up. But I guess in this new generation, because we talked about it, parents are increasingly starting to providing their kids allowance and money and help and support. So I think America is moving towards a model that's similar to China's, where families across generations are being more financially supportive of younger generations. You know, but for my generation, that wasn't the case.
I'm thinking, because people kind of talk about this in some negative light because the economy is not doing great and people prices are going up, interest rate has remained high. And that's why young people can't afford to buy houses. So that's all kind of, you know, negative. But then there might be a silver lining to all this. I feel like if we keep doing this for a little bit longer, like if the younger generation just like suffer through a little bit more and the parents also, maybe they'll turn out to be able to build their relationships better. Like maybe as a culture, like in America, families, generations won't be as separate as before. Mm. You know, maybe their parents won't be like kicking their kids out by a certain date. Maybe if they just like live together long enough and they change their perspectives a little bit, and if they make a commitment to make things work, like I'm just going to live with my mom, period. Mm. And, you know, just make the commitment to make things work. And maybe they'll discover wonderful things about each other that they couldn't stand earlier. And because everything is up to change, right?
Or like this article by Callum Mason, I bought a house with my friend. It was the only way. Quote, according to Miss Pountney, I knew that we couldn't afford to do it alone. Mm-hmm. So she went in with her friend, Frankie Presley, and they bought a house together. I have a question, though, about because you said you wouldn't buy. It would be unusual for a Chinese person to buy a mortgage jointly with their friends when they have their family behind them.
Right.
Do you have property shares, what we call timeshares in China?
What does that mean?
So in the United States, we have something called a timeshare. This is usually not for your primary residence. You will be like, oh, I always want to, I like Hawaii. I don't want to go there and stay in a hotel. I want to go to Hawaii every year. So you'll go to Hawaii 1 year with a company will oftentimes pay for your trip. You'll stay in a hotel, a budget hotel for like, you know, 3-4 star. And usually you will end up buying 1 week of a very nice condominium that's beachfront property in Hawaii, or not necessarily Hawaii. They do this all over the place in the United States. They have a nice condominium, nice home or whatever, a cabin in the woods, and people will buy with 30 other people or 50 other people.
Wow. You know,
each person will buy 1 week, and they'll say your week is from February da 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 to February da da da. So each week or 2 weeks, depends on how much you want, a company will have the controlling interest over the property and sublet each week to people. We call this a timeshare. Now, every year you fly to Honolulu and you stay for a week in your apartment because it's your apartment for the week and fly back. Do you have this arrangement in China?
Not that I've heard of. This is like, I had to like twist my mind over this because it's like thinking about housing from a totally different dimension. You're talking about the time dimension now. Like, I feel like I don't really own the place. Right, I own a period of time living in a certain place. I personally don't like the idea because I don't even like a schedule. You know, I don't feel like I have to be in Hawaii for that particular week or else I pay for nothing.
Every year, though, you're thinking, oh, it's, you know, 6 months to Hawaii. It's five months to Hawaii. And you don't have to pay for the hotel because you already
own it. Who wants to go to the same place? year after year for vacation. Oh,
imagine this. I should open this company in China. Imagine this. You go to Hainan, you buy a nice condo, you sublet that to, 52 residents, maybe 50.
Oh my gosh.
In the middle of the, you have a week on each, in the middle of the year and the end of the year to clean it up because you need to make sure maintenance, whatever. And you could sublet that to every year you go to Hainan. You don't have to pay. Once you buy that timeshare for the next forever, your entire life, you have a place you can go stay in Hainan. No rent, no hotel cost, nothing. It's yours.
No. Okay. For one thing, if I try to sell that idea to my husband, he'll be like, okay, in one single year, 52 other families have been in this apartment, 51, and they carry 51 sets of like combination of all kinds of germs and bacterias. He would have to like disinfect the whole place, cabinets inside out, like toilets, everything. And that would take like 3 days. And then you have to air it out. So yeah, that's definitely not for us. But I'm not too sure if that's okay. I think thinking as a Chinese person, like psychologically, I don't feel like I own the place at all. It's more like an Airbnb where you... Yeah, where you have kind of, to go.
Similar.
You know what I mean? Like, if it's an Airbnb, I have the freedom not to go. Yeah. I only go when I want to go, like a few weeks prior to that.
Yes.
But if...
You could also sell your timeshare. So you own it for 5 years, you sell it.
Oh my God.
You sell your week to someone else.
You know, when things get that complicated, I choose to forget. I think it will be like more work than benefit. It'll take up so much brain space. So I'm sorry, Jason. I'm just not... taking up that deal. Maybe you can just, shop around for more customers. I just feel like as Chinese, like mentality, they like to feel secure that the point of buying a place is to know that it's their own place. You know, they can do whatever they want with it. They can go there whenever they want. Imagine
paint the wall blue.
Yeah. Like imagine how messy the place would get. Nobody would take care of it as their own.
I've been into hundreds of apartments in China looking because every year for a while, Summer and I were moving. We went into an apartment and it was one of those situations where they're like, people still living in the apartment, which I felt very uncomfortable about. And I'd never do that again to someone. Mm. But we went in and when we got into this one apartment, there were some children lived there and they had literally taken Crayola crayons and crayoned the walls as hot about. Yeah, as high as, your waist, entire apartment. And I was like, this place looks like a madhouse. And they were like, we'll paint it.
That is my place, Jason.
Like, I don't want this one.
That is my place. And it's got not just crayons, but pencils, paint, ink, glue, and other unidentifiable items all over the place. You give her paper. No, thank you. I have the wall. We've given up, but it's okay. It's like memory, part of the memory of the house now. So anyhow, not so much.
Wait a minute, if you paint over that, is she going to be crushed?
We don't know. We haven't thought about it. We're so exhausted from just day-to-day living.
Yeah.
We're not going to paint the house yet. Mm. Maybe after she goes to college. But then it'll be like, wow, all the memories. She's still here every day through her paintings and all that. Mm. But anyhow, so definitely not the time, whatever arrangement you just mentioned. Mm. And also, I found this bit of the information I was talking about earlier. So this is from an article. I don't know the source.
Sure.
So under tenants in common, the arrangements we mentioned, although each of you will only own part of the house, you will be liable for the whole mortgage. And your credit record will also likely be linked to your friends while you co-own the house, meaning that missed payments by any party may affect the other co-owners. And co-ownership can also affect your borrowing power beyond the mortgage itself, as a bank only sees your portion of the house as an asset, but the entire mortgage as a liability. So that's something that...
So Bebe looks like she's trying to dissuade people from this.
It is a very delicate situation. I mean...
I agree. I think it's dangerous. But I'm also trying to put myself into the shoes of a 25-year-old American who is tired of paying rent and is looking for an alternative. And there must be, some tools that you can... use to overcome some of the obstacles we've mentioned. I want to, but you know, I'm also going to mention another obstacle to add to the challenge that we're dealing with, because I don't want to candy coat this. Sure. And that is, and it's mentioned in one of the articles, heating or cooling. So one of you likes it hot in the winter, right? But the other one's like, that costs money. My family doesn't waste money on heating. Now you're fighting over heating bills and you live in the same, you cohabitate. Yeah. So that's another problem.
Yeah, I never thought about that. Or smells. You know, if one person likes, say, Indian food and the other like traditional, I don't know, like something that, okay, sushi, or like Japanese meals with like no smells whatsoever. And they might.
So they smell like Japanese curry now.
Who knows? But this is one thing that I guess is a test of how strong your friendship is. But you know,
maybe in some cases they already lived together as roommates renting before, and they're like, let's make the jump to buying. Hey, we already live together, right?
Yeah, I think the situation will differ, right? With each pair of friends.
Can we get, let's look at a specific example, because I do have one here. And these two gentlemen live in London, and they have millions and millions of followers on Instagram. And you know, when I'm thinking of a group of people, I'm thinking of these two guys. Mm-hmm. So this is from standard.co.uk. That's the United Kingdom. And it says, comment why buying a home with a friend or a sibling could take the pressure off of your love life. And I'm not going to touch the love life part, but it has a picture of these Instagrammers, Olamide Soyemi and Cullen Farley, who bought a home together, fixed it up together, and are happily residing in it together. So I think, you know, for some people who maybe already have a long-term friendship with someone, it might work in their particular cases. Now, if you're just like meeting someone out of the blue, obviously that's dangerous. But maybe you already were roommates in college or for many years, and you're tired of, you know, renting can be just burning your money, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's not a financial investment in your future. That's but if you true. Have the down payment and you buy a home, and theoretically, if the home stays the same value or increases later, you'll have more money. Plus, even if it just stays the same value, all the money that you put in when you sell it comes back to you.
Yeah. And also, like mentally, you feel more grounded. Like you have a place. But I think you start with the understanding that this is a temporary arrangement, right? Unless the two end up getting married, like an illegal kind of bonding. Sure. But I think they go into this knowing that this is a short-term arrangement, maybe just for a few years. Hmm. Like I can imagine doing something like this with my cousin. Mm-hmm, you know, I can't imagine doing this with any friends because, first of all, I won't even do anything like it. I'd rather rent, because that's like, you know, you don't have to think about this as much. You don't worry as much. But if I had to do this, I could totally do this with my cousin. Mm-hmm. You know, she will. She's good at with like finance and all that detailed stuff. And I'll be, you know, I'll make more money and contribute more financially. I think it's if you can find someone who is more compatible as roommates. That will work because some people, like my cousin, she likes to deal with the more detailed stuff, like you know, finances and filling out documents. She likes things in order. And me, on the other hand, whatever, you know, just leave me alone to do my work. And then the other things, if things are messy, fine. If things are neat, fine. You know, I don't pick over things like that. So in cases like it, that will work. Yeah.
So your point is, I think, really well taken, is that while this may be starting to take on a small degree of popularity in the West, that you think that at least in today's current economic and, you know, social climate, this isn't something that's coming to China anytime soon, not in a big way.
I feel like it's a little bit ahead of time, but who knows what young people do these days, right? I think they are so much more adventurous than we are getting old, Jason. Just so that's a reminder I'm like telling myself every day now, because I sort of think of myself still in my like 30s. That's how I feel. But actually I'm like 10 years older than that. So the younger people, I think they think differently, and I don't really have anyone that young to talk to. So they have their own ideas. And
you know, one thing I think is a, you know, can I go off on this a little bit? Because
please.
Firstly, I want to say two things. The first thing I wanted to say is a kind of a whole thing of its own. Say you're buying, you're probably not buying a very expensive home. If you're in the market for sharing a home, firstly, it's in an expensive home. So we're talking about a home that's $300,000 or $400,000 if it's in the US, not $500,000 or $600,000. So then both of you need 10, 20, 30% down. Otherwise, the bank is going to not give you the loan at all. Mm-hmm. So if you can find someone who's got $20,000, $30,000 to combine with your $20,000, $30,000, you've probably found someone who's at least financially responsible enough to have saved that much money. Then it's probably not someone who's just going to randomly, you know, be losing their employment. But having said that, I want to change it a little bit to something else. A different idea for the United States, for people in the United States, is buying a piece of property together and then putting, you know, those we talked about microhomes, putting two microhomes, say there's three of you, they're three friends, right? You buy a piece of property together, you all make payments on the property, then each of you finances your own microhome or mini home, whatever you want to call it, and puts it on the property. Then that, you know, your finances are still somewhat separated. You know what I mean?
Like space, you've got still got your own space. You can clink your glasses on your back porch at dinner
and then
go back and eat your own meals. Yeah. Well, why not? I mean, then would you have to pay twice the price for plumbing? I keep thinking of the issue of plumbing whenever you mention the mini
you have to have plumbing. Yes.
That's not a problem, I guess. And also, I think, you know, when you are 25, right, we're talking about younger people, when you're 25, your life is going to be not stable anyhow, but in different.
Right. Yeah. No matter where you are.
So we're not looking for the perfect life. Okay. And if there are things that you just have to like deal with, then you deal with it. It's either one thing or another. Right. So if we do this, let's not have the mindset that we found the perfect solution. There's no perfect solution. And you do whatever you can, the best you can do at different stages of your life. And my thinking is probably they will live like this for 2 years, either, you know, buying a place together or building a place together. And then they'll each find their suitable one and they maybe sell the place. And, you know, hopefully interest rates will go down by a bit and they can afford a mortgage.
I think you watched a lot of movies.
I don't. The last time I watched a movie, when was that? Like years ago.
Well, I mean, in the United States, the procession towards finding a partner is decreasing and marriages are decreasing. People are staying single for longer than ever. Marriages are failing at higher rates than ever. And fewer marriages are happening. Maybe we could do an episode about that someday.
Well, think of it this way then. If, let's say, 50% of marriages fail on average, then let's say 60% of all these tenants in common arrangements might fail or even higher. Then it won't look so weird anymore, right? I mean, half of marriages fail. So what do you expect? If it's going to work out for a year, then it's year. Yeah, 2 years, two true. Years.
That's interesting because that brings up, you know, you were talking at the beginning of the show about the legal issues. Because in the state of California, if you're a married couple, there is a higher probability that the wife gets the home. Huh. And if there are liquid assets, oftentimes those are distributed to the husband. The wife tends to get the home. That is just kind of the way that the law sort of bends in that direction generally. So this is a whole new thing. You got two friends. They're going to court. They both want whatever. They're breaking up. Man, the legality of this. Yeah. Like you said, a lot of lawyers are going to make a lot of money off of this. I want to share a piece of a statistic. This is from the BBC HSBC. And it says China, and this is just one statistic, China millennials lead home ownership and percentage of millennials who own their own home. So in China, 70% of millennials own their own home. That is with or without a mortgage. Whereas in the
millennials are in their 20s, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So that's insane. 70% of 20-year-old people in their 20s in China own their own home.
Wow.
That's remarkable.
It's hard to believe that.
Whereas in the United States, but I'm going to trust HSBC over my own opinions. In the United States, that's 35%. And again, that is because while you're right, in Beijing or Shanghai, the price of buying a hunk of real estate is massive, right? But if you go to these second tier cities, it's not. Yeah. That's true. It's much, much, much more affordable.
Yeah, I can probably get a like apartment somewhere if it's like far and remote enough in China, just like with the money I have in my account. I think at places you can probably get a place for less than like 100,000 RMB.
Really?
So yeah, there are places like
that's surprising.
China's
like $20,000? No way.
I'm sure somewhere like a smaller place.
Wow. Yeah. I'm moving there.
Well, you'll be bored in like 3 days.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Like, you'll be bored before you finish painting that place. So yeah, I think legal-wise, this will engender, like, a whole new set of, like, laws and regulations. Things are changing, right? We're in a new time now. But also, I think the younger generation, they're more creative, you know? Mm-hmm. They live less in the set ways. Like, you have to do this or you have to do that, which is a good thing. Mm. Right. That's how time progresses. Right. That's how we evolve as a society.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to The Bridge.
I'm looking for solutions for Americans. Obviously, not all Americans are in this situation. A lot of Americans are doing quite well. You know, upper middle class Americans are putting down payments on how I got that on as some feedback on my social media where I was presenting these facts and figures, which I do often to the world. And some people were like, yeah, well, that's not everyone. My son and daughter, both in their 20s, both have a down payment on a house, both have full-time jobs, both make, you know, such and such money. And I was thinking, wow, good for them. They're doing really well. Mm. But that is the case for some millions of Americans in these generations are making the American dream come true. Whereas there's an increasingly more complex relationship with real estate for tens of millions of other Americans. So not everyone's in the same boat. I'm sorry, go ahead, Bebe.
And also, well, that's one of the issues we have, right? Both for the US and also in China, how some people just have way more than they can use probably in their lifetime. Others don't have the basics. So that's one of the problems that's like global.
It's global. It's everywhere.
Another aspect is even for the friend who sent you that message, who knows what things will be like 2 years down the road, right? With the society changing the way it is, with new technology coming in, you know, maybe the like his son or daughter's job will be replaced by robots in a year or two or, you know, by AI. Who knows? So all of us, I think we need to just realize more than ever that the only thing that doesn't change is change itself, right? The universe is nothing but just change. That's something I read somewhere. And I think it starts to make sense now. So let's get ready for that. We live with that kind of mentality that we won't expect too much out of every moment.
I have one last article, and it contradicts some of the HSBC data. This is from sciencedirect.com. And it says, the title of the article is Multiple Home Ownership in Chinese Cities, an Institutional and Cultural Perspective. And it's a scientific article written by statisticians and so forth. Youqin Huang, Dai Chun Yi, and William A.V. Clark. And there's just two pieces of information I want to share, which I think are fascinating. Mm-hmm. Number one, China is a country of homeowners where they claim more than 80% of households, this is not just millennials, this is everyone, 80% of households own their own homes. Mm-hmm. And then second piece of information, 20% of urban households own multiple homes. Mm-hmm. And I do know a few Chinese friends who inherited their grandparents' homes. And so they have the apartment that was bought for them or they bought with their parents. Mm-hmm. And then they have their grandparents on both sides. They have their homes as well. I'm not going to say their name, but there are a few of them that I know who have 3-4 apartments here in Beijing. Mm. And so they rent them out. And then they actually work full time just because they want to have a job, but they don't need to because of their real estate assets. Yeah. I think it's very interesting.
Cool. I've come across these articles, like especially the residents in Guangdong. It could be like the people selling dumplings like along, what do you call it? Like a storefront.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like
yeah,
a storefront, yeah, tiny little greasy spoon restaurant. Mm. And people have been eating there for like decades and also feeling sorry for them because they've been working so hard, like getting up at 3 every morning. Mm-hmm. And then it turned out that they own like a whole building, like not just apartments, but they'll take out like a ring of keys, you know, like key to every single apartment.
These are my apartments.
Yeah, these are my apartments. I'm just bored. I'm serious. I've seen news pieces like that quite a few times now.
Wow.
And especially in like in Guangdong, because the people there, they don't like, I'm just talking about in general terms, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, they don't like to show off their wealth. It's not like in Shanghai. The general impressions I see in Shanghai, you got to look
good, yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
You got to let people know that you are well off, mm, and you show this in everything you put on yourself. But then in Guangdong, like they just wear t-shirts and like flip-flops, but they could turn out to be like billionaires.
Yeah.
And that's just how they dress and live. And they're just more chill, you know, relaxed. They don't have to, they don't feel like they have to look to have made it in a way.
Yeah.
So it really depends. Just interesting story.
That is really interesting. I had someone at a bank in San Francisco tell me the same thing. Oh. She became a banker who approved loans and whatnot. And I said, oh, wow. So what do rich people come in? Do they wear like really fancy clothes? Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, people who come in wearing fancy clothes are workers. And people who are really rich come in like sweatpants.
Yeah, they don't care. They just want to be comfortable. Care. Yeah. So.
Yeah. She has a theory that the nicer you dress, the probably the less money in your bank account.
Because you're trying to prove to other people that, right, you know, yeah, you're making it.
Yeah. Well, that is all the time that we have. I would especially like people to email us on this topic. If whatever your situation is, tell us about your situation. Tell us about your kid's situation. Tell us about your friend or family situation. We want to know more about what it's like, whether you're in China, whether you're in the United States, whether you're in Uzbekistan. We want to know. Please email us at welovethebridge@gmail.com and tell us your real estate story.
Yeah.
And we'll be happy to share it on the air.
Because we want to be updated with real life information.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Jason. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.